Welcome to this session of the Religious Freedom Annual Review. As a reformed labor and employment lawyer myself, I remember only enough to be dangerous at this point. I have a great deal of interest personally in this topic, and we're going to hear from an expert, Samuel Nielsen. Sam is an attorney and educator. He worked for an international defense firm before shifting the focus of his practice to defending employees in employment disputes. He externed for a federal district court judge and received a couple of recognitions which, as a lawyer myself, I know are very significant. From 2013 to 17, Super Lawyers named him a Southern California rising star in employment litigation. The competition for that is stiff. The National Advocates twice recognized him as one of California's top 40 under 40. The problem with that, Sam, is that eventually you get to be over 40, and then there are other categories of significance that you can be recognized in. In 2013, and I think this is significant as an indication of Sam's character, he received the Wiley Emanuel Award for pro bono services from the California State Bar. So this is a statewide recognition, in part based on his efforts to secure asylum for a Coptic Christian fleeing religious persecution. He is the international section chair for the J. Reuben Clark Law Society's employment law section. He's the co-chair of the Orange County Bar Association's Education Committee. He's a presidential fellow at the University of South Carolina, where he focuses his research on refugees and religious communities in Western Europe. There's much more that could be said about him. But I happen to know from a reliable source, he's married to a beautiful wife, and they have 3.5 beautiful girls. So with that, let's welcome Sam Nielsen.
I don't know, on this, can everyone hear me okay without it? Or should I, for the recording, probably be. All right, I'll hold it out here. Hopefully that works well for everybody. As well, I just wanted to apologize. I don't think it's casual Friday, even though I am a California attorney. I have to wear jeans because my appendix decided to declare independence on Monday. So, there you go. Got a little feedback. Could be the location. Let me try over here. Thank you. All right, that's at least a bit better. All right, so we're going to be looking at workplace rights, specifically for employees. What are the workers' rights and accommodations in employment? And a brief outline, because again, I want this to be a discussion, a more of an interactive process that we're going to go through together. So first, we'll talk about the religious rights in the workplace. What are those rights? Then we're going to go over effectively asserting these rights. Rights make no difference if you don't assert them. Okay. We will also go over examples. The specific examples that we have are religious expression, dress and grooming, and Sabbath observance. Those are the three, I would say, hot topics or the most that most people will face in their working and professional career. And then finally, we'll move into questions. But if you have questions at any point in time, just raise your hand. We have a mic. And since we're recording this, just remember to wait for the mic and to ask your question so we can make sure it gets picked up. But first, employment law and religion. What governs employment law and our religious rights? Okay, is it just an inherent right, our religious rights? Is it given to us by the Constitution? Where do they come from? Think about that question for a moment. And really, if you boil it down, we inherently have these rights in this country of religious freedom. But the Constitution has also given the right to regulate commerce, to government. Commerce is going to be involved in our employment. So because of that, there's federal laws. Congress has acted with federal law, specifically Title VII, okay, of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 is what's going to govern workplace rights. It only applies to employers with 15 or more employees. It doesn't apply if you have 14. Okay? You have to have 15. There's also state laws. State laws can have different exceptions. In California, for example, where I practice, religious protections come into play when you have 5 employees. Okay? Every state can be different. Even municipalities can have their own laws governing religious discrimination, harassment, etc. Okay. And as I mentioned, it may apply for fewer employers. Yes.
Wyoming is one.
All right. So Wyoming, there you go. It applies
terrible
with
law.
One. Okay. But what law governs? What law is going to govern? Say you have 15 employees and you're operating in California where I practice. What law is going to govern? What law are you going to seek your protection under?
The most favorable.
Exactly, the most favorable. And California, for as much of a, you know, bad rap it gets, it actually is much more protective of religious freedom and expression than federal law. So just keep that in mind. You're always going to go for the most favorable law. So what are my workplace rights? Do you have to check your religion at the door? We hear in politics oftentimes mention, you know, there are some places that faith just shouldn't go. That's not what it is in the workplace. Never has been. Faith informs workers, and they are entitled to protections to that. Okay? You're entitled to be free from discrimination, harassment, and retaliation. Okay, you can't be discriminated against based on your religious belief, your expression. Okay, you can't be harassed by it either. And if you complain about discrimination or harassment, you can't be retaliated against for doing so. That also is a violation. So, in addition, besides being free from discrimination, harassment, and retaliation, I should take a step back. What is religious harassment? Okay, is it someone making maybe a snide comment about your faith? What would you think? Okay. Generally, harassment is actually much more. It's more pervasive, and it's unwelcome. You've let the person know, hey, don't do that. You essentially expressed your faith. An example I can give you is this Mormon woman. She started working at this company, and she had a Jewish supervisor. And after some time, he said, you know, can you just tell me about the polygamy thing? I know you're Mormon. Just tell me about it. And she responded, well, you know, it's an ancient Jewish custom practiced by Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that stopped the conversation, and it didn't go further. But it wasn't necessarily an unwelcome question to her. So would that be harassment? No. You know, and not really. On the other hand, if there were consistent negative comments about her faith, okay, or of any other faith, and the woman had said, you know, please don't do that, don't mock my faith, etc., but it continued, that then would be religious harassment. Discrimination can be having different conditions of employment, different privileges of employment. One example, there was a Muslim meat packer, and his coworkers really didn't like his religion. So they turned off the hot water for him, and he couldn't use hot water to wash his hands to warm him up after working with frozen meat. It's religious discrimination. They're treating him differently in the conditions of his employment. Okay? But beyond that, We know discrimination, harassment, retaliation, it governs religion, it also governs race, sex, etc. But something that's different that religion actually has in addition to the workplace protections afforded on basis of race or gender, etc., is that employers must make accommodations for that individual's faith. But it's not just that they have the faith, they express a belief. It has to be a sincere religious belief. It's a compromise, if you will. So someone can't be, say, Jewish on Saturday, so they can miss work for Sabbath, and they're Christian on Sunday, so they can miss, you know, have the entire weekend. It doesn't really work like that, okay? It's sincere. That's the key point. It's a sincere religious belief, okay? This is known as a reasonable accommodation. Did any of you attend Stephen Collis's presentation yesterday on schools? Okay. It was a very good presentation, and it talked about accommodation, reasonable accommodation. And employers are obligated to accommodate people's faith. Okay. All right. So what, though, about one's faith can be accommodated? What do you think? Great, that you attend worship service, okay? That is a great one, okay? What else would an employer need to accommodate? Daily prayers, good.
Religious dress,
correct. Perhaps even religious grooming, okay? Maybe they wear a beard, they're Sikh, okay? All of that, okay? It's all aspects of it. Your observance, your practice, your belief, everything. The employer is obligated to provide a reasonable accommodation. Okay? But again, you can't get an accommodation unless you ask for it. Okay, we have the obligation, if you want to assert your rights, you have to ask for it. But in asking for it, again, you have to show it's sincerely held. A sincerely held belief. I mentioned before, you can't just, you know, change your religion by day simply to achieve certain benefits over other workers. Okay? You have a sincerely held belief. But are beliefs always constant? Can they change over time? Absolutely. You can have maybe perhaps more devotion further in. Okay. And you also might have certain practices that you do at some times and not others. Consider veiling, for example, and Muslim women in veiling. Some Muslim women will consistently veil, always in public. Others might only veil during Ramadan, during the fast. Okay, that's the only time that they are going to veil. Similarly, on the belief adherence changing over time, what if someone converts to a new religion? There's an instance of a Seventh-day Adventist. He took over a year of investigation and study before he joined the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and he continued to work some Sundays, or Saturdays, excuse me, different Saturday shifts over the next month or so. Then the employer had no Saturday shifts that needed to be worked on by any employee for the next year, until after that they mandated that every employee work again. They provided allowances if you were on vacation or you had a medical appointment, etc., but they did not carve out religious observances, okay, a Sabbath observance. And they would not accommodate this individual. And they said, look, you worked on Saturdays in the past, you can do it again. He said, no, okay, my faith is different now than it was then. I'm more deep in my faith. And that is fully protected and permitted under the law. You have the right. It's your sincere religious belief. Does your sincere belief have to be universally shared by other members of your faith? Can an employer say, well, you know, Joe over here, he's a good Jewish man. He doesn't, you know, stop working at sundown on Friday. So why are you? Can they do that? No. It is subjective to the employee. What does the employee believe about that employee's sincere religious belief? Okay. Can an employer question the sincerity of it, of the belief? I mean, if that's the obligation, they only have to give you an accommodation for a sincere religious belief. Can they question the sincerity of it? Okay, only very little, you say. That is correct. To the extent that they need to determine, is this truly a sincere belief? An example that I can share is I was at a large law firm when I started my practice, and they said, all right, mandatory meeting on Sunday. I said, you know what? I'll get everything done you need for the meeting ahead of time, but I'm not able to be at the meeting on Sunday for religious reasons. So to which the partner responded, oh, so like, can you, is it just during your church time? Like, what's the dynamics of that? The employer is totally obligated, or not obligated, totally permitted to question that, okay? To understand the sincerity of the belief and work for a reasonable accommodation. They have to interact with the employee to understand, okay, what accommodations will work? What will be a reasonable accommodation? What will be a reasonable allowance of how we can change things so that you don't have to compromise your faith? And a reasonable accommodation, it eliminates any conflict, okay? So you have a conflict, say, between an employment requirement, such as, I don't know, what are some that maybe you've either come across in practice that you've seen or that you've experienced yourself of a job requirement and a certain religious practice, or that you've seen with others?
Yes. That is, you know, work days. Another one might be you have an employment lunch that everyone is expected to attend, but no food is offered for someone who might have dietary restrictions patient that way.
Okay, excellent. So, and again, so I can pick it up with the microphone. It was, you know, a lunch. If you have a lunch and, you know, someone might have dietary restrictions, you need to make sure that there's food available to have it. Yes?
If you would like to keep having the conversation during, I can pass the mic around during the presentation if you'd like as well.
Sure.
Sorry,
yeah. Yes, go ahead.
Here. Well, I've been refused many jobs without accommodations because of certain medical procedures that I think ought to be restricted and not openly available to everyone. I don't know how many that is, but I've been refused many, never offered any accommodations.
So, meaning your profession, you're a doctor, you're in medicine?
Yeah, I'm a physician.
Okay, and so you've been refused positions because of you're not wanting to...
I've asked, would I be permitted to choose whom I do certain things for based on my own personal ethical beliefs.
Okay. Is it ethical beliefs today, or do they drill down into your religious beliefs?
Well, they're my religious beliefs, but I don't want to attribute them to my denomination.
Okay. But do you tell them it's religious beliefs?
Yes, I tell them it's religious.
Okay.
Religious and ethical.
Okay. So with that, we'll get into that, whether it's religious and ethical, or if you just say religious, because there can be different obligations for the employer. Okay.
I'm sometimes asked what religion I belong to, and then say, oh, well, I know a whole bunch of people from your religion who don't do that. Who don't have that, don't see that restriction.
No, understandable. And with that, the employer is not supposed to be asking, you know, what is your religion? That's getting into, you know, different territories. It's like if they're asking, what's your age in a job interview? Those are things you don't do. But medical procedures, okay, that's another example, okay, of, you know, they're not eliminating a conflict. There's apparently been no discussion, if I'm understanding you right, on whether, you know, you would be able to refer a patient, maybe to someone else for a procedure, or has there been that opportunity, or just they've said no?
Yeah, they just said, well, that's so much a part of this job that you're not suitable for it.
Okay. All right. But again, all conflicts, though, would need to be eliminated to provide a reasonable accommodation. And employers can perhaps say it would be an undue hardship. It would be too difficult for us to accommodate you. And that gets into the employer's perspective, okay? Because as employees, we're not entitled to the accommodation of our choice. Okay? The employer has the obligation to talk, to engage in a dialogue, to eliminate the conflicts. They can't just eliminate one conflict. The example I gave earlier about the Seventh-day Adventist, okay? They said, well, why don't you start working the night shift? You can still get to your church services Saturday morning. And the individual said, no, because my conflict is I don't work on the Sabbath. My Sabbath is sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. So if you're having me work the night shift on Friday night, I'm still violating the Sabbath. Okay, great, I can go to my church services, but that's not the only reason why I'm saying I don't want to work. Okay, all conflicts need to be eliminated to get a reasonable accommodation. Okay, various examples of this. Okay, flexible scheduling. For a Muslim individual who wants to pray, okay, are they going to have time to take off on Friday for prayers? Do they have that flexible scheduling? Is there substitutes and swaps of your schedule? Okay, you can transfer jobs and change assignments. Maybe you have a company, an employer who says, you know, we are the employer who says Merry Christmas to every customer when they leave at Christmas time. That's what our company does. Then you have perhaps a Jewish retail clerk who says, you know what, I don't feel comfortable doing that. Okay, then they can put in a lateral transfer. Okay, and change the job assignments to work with that employee. Question, yes?
We asked yesterday.
And sorry, we got the microphone.
One second. Oh. Sorry.
The oppressive microphone.
Thank you.
I'm just kidding. We asked yesterday, as a group in a employer religious right class, what about a woman who applies for a waitress job but wants to wear the full Islamic garb where you can't see her face or anything, not like a hijab. And you're like, well, we have to have our waitresses smile at people. You know, would you have to hire her if she's equally able at being a waitress, or could you have her do another job within the same restaurant?
Okay, to be able to accommodate.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so to accommodate them, then yes, you can offer an alternative position. They have the right, if that's their belief, and they come and say, I need this accommodation, but you can't simply remove them from customers and say, hey, customers wouldn't like it. Okay, and again, it depends. In the federal law, there's cases that go both ways. They say you can remove them from customers, others say you can't. That itself, you're segregating them out. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, they have guidelines that say you can't move someone based on customer preference. It's rather than incumbent on the employer to explain, hey, we are an inclusive, whatever, we welcome this religious practice, okay? So again, your specific question, I've never come across that where it's like the full face or anything, oftentimes with the hijab, but then there's also the inverse. There was Nazarite, an individual, a man, he wanted to be a waiter, and he had long hair. And restaurant said, you know what, all of our waiters are clean cut. And he said, hey, for religious reasons, I have long hair. I can't cut it. I'll put it in a ponytail. I'll do something, get it out of the way so it's more clean cut. Okay, that's an accommodation, right? The employer said no. Okay, they ended up having an adverse judgment against them. because that would otherwise be reasonable. It doesn't cost them anything. It might change things slightly, might change their look, but if you remember the Abercrombie and Fitch case a few years ago, okay, where the employer didn't want to hire an applicant because she was wearing a hijab. She never said, I'm Muslim. They knew she was, and they said that will violate our look policy. Okay, but it wouldn't have cost them any money. It's a de minimis cost, is the legal jargon. Just meaning it's not an expensive cost, it's something that can readily be done. Okay. But is it a reasonable accommodation to segregate a religious employee from customers? We've kind of touched on that, but what do you think? Can you say, no, you're wearing the hijab, we don't want you here, or I don't know, whatever the case may be, based on the customer preference. Maybe a customer doesn't want to see a Jewish man with a skull cap, okay, or the ringlets. Maybe they don't want that. Can you say, all right, you can't work with the customers? Customers don't want it. Okay, I see a lot of heads shaking no, and that's correct. You can't do that, okay, because it's not based on customer preference. The individual employee's religious rights take precedence over customer preference. Okay, and I mentioned this again a bit too. It's mandatory unless it imposes an undue hardship. That also is going to change. In California, it has to be a substantial cost to the employer. That's pretty significant, okay, substantial cost. Federal law, which governs essentially everywhere, but also, which is pretty consistent with, you know, some states, it's the most protection you're going to get. An undue hardship, I mentioned, it's de minimis. It's defined in different ways, okay? But it can be, it's safety, security concerns. It's, they say it might have a health justification for what they want to do. A Sikh individual, he worked for Chevron in California, and regulations changed from Cal OSHA. They said, okay, you have to wear these full masks. They have to have a tight seal. So the employer said, you know what? To comply with these regulations, you'll need to shave your beard. And he said, I'm not going to do it. It's part of my faith. So they tried to work with him, and he said, look, I'm not going to do it. And so they moved him into a different position. They didn't have a lateral position available to him. It was essentially a demotion. He took a 10% pay cut and became a janitor. Was that a reasonable accommodation? What would you say?
I'd say it's just fine. The law probably wouldn't hold it. Keep him at the same pay.
Okay. But there was no other obligation, no other thing. Okay, so that's an interesting thought. There was pay more to be a janitor. You can't cut the pay. Okay, but that pay, I mean, 10%, it's probably $9,000. Okay, but it brings up a good point. The court actually said, you know what? They tried to accommodate you, and it was a reasonable accommodation to have the decrease in pay because accommodating you for the health and safety reasons, it would have been a violation of the health and safety law. An employer is not obligated to violate laws or regulations to accommodate. Another example is a woman, a Christian woman in the eastern United States. She said, you know what, I'm not going to give my social security number to you guys. Let's do a different number that would just be unique to me, because social security number being identified with me, that's like the mark of the beast. That was her sincerely held religious belief. And they said, no, we're not going to do that. IRS regulations require us to get your social security number. Other laws require that. So no, we're not going to do that. And the court said, hey, the employer, you're fine. You don't have to. Because, again, it's an undue burden. It can mean a lot of different things, but one thing is they don't have to violate the law or regulations. That's one of the big ones. Health, safety concerns are also others. Sometimes employers will say, oh, well, you know, it's safety. You can't wear a hijab. or safety, you can't wear a skirt. But the employer, again, has the burden to show that it truly is safety. There were some flight attendants in Colorado, and they had worked for a subcontractor, I believe it was of either United or Continental, which is one and the same today. They had worked for years as subcontractors wearing the hijab and skirts. And then there was a new subcontractor who took over, and they said, the new subcontractor said, you know, it's a safety thing. You can't wear those skirts or your hijabs. It's safety. These were flight attendants who were just cleaning. Okay? And the court, again, was, no, you can't say that. You have the obligation, employer, to show it is a true health or safety risk. Okay? That, there's a burden shifting, if you will. Okay? The employee also can rebut the claims of undue hardship based on past experience. Walmart, okay, for years had accommodated a Mormon employee in Western Washington. He was an assistant manager of a store. For 14 years, he didn't work Sundays. He said, I'm not going to for religious reasons. There were no issues with it. Walmart, though, being Walmart, top down, says, all right, new scheduling system, everybody, and we're not going to allow you to opt out for religious reasons. They told him, you can find someone else to cover your shift. So he tried diligently. There were times when he couldn't. So he wouldn't show up to work. It was his sincerely held religious belief. He was penalized for it. He then went to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, and said, hey, they're not accommodating me. They accommodated me for 14 years. They still can do it. They're just not doing it. It resulted in a judgment or an agreement. It wasn't a full judgment. A settlement agreement between Walmart and the EEOC where this individual then was going to be insured accommodations in the future, and he received in addition $70,000 because of their actions against him. They had accommodated him. He was able to say, no, it's not an undue hardship. You guys can accommodate me. You did for 14 years. Your new scheduling system, you can adjust it. You can do something with it. But what about an employee who says, hey, it's against my belief to even find someone to substitute on a Sabbath observance? That would violate my beliefs. What does the employer have to do? Do they have to find someone else to substitute? If they tell the employee, you do it, and he says, I can't, it violates my beliefs because I'm asking someone else to violate the Sabbath. What would you think? What would it cost an employer to then maybe just have the manager or someone else say, all right, I'll ask, you know, Joe over here if he can cover? It's reasonable. Correct. It's reasonable for the employer to have to do it. It doesn't cost them anything, maybe 5 minutes of time. Okay. Keep that in mind. Yes, and we have a microphone. It's being recorded. That's why.
In the case, the example you gave, did they change their scheduling, or did he still have to find a substitute, or did his employer, Walmart, find a substitute?
So in the Walmart case, Walmart had to do different training on how to accommodate. So essentially, in that particular case, the Mormon employee didn't have, as I understand it, any objection to finding someone to swap for him. This was a separate case.
One other quick question. So the only reason he was able to do that, to not work on Sunday, is because of his past 14 years, like someone else?
It showed that he could, but I saw that you came in a bit late. You can have beliefs change over time. So your devotion can increase over time, and the employer then still is obligated to make accommodation for that increased devotion. It's a good question, though. But again, it helps as an employee. So if you're ever wanting to make sure you can get a reasonable accommodation as an employee, try to be consistent with it. The more you make exceptions here or there, okay, to, maybe I can, you know, work Sunday this day or, you know, Saturday, whatever the Sabbath observance is, then it makes it more difficult if in the future even if you have the sincerely held belief, okay, because if you've maintained your religion, yes, some accommodations can be made, but it's a whole lot easier if you've been consistent at it, to consistently affirm your belief. But how do you effectively assert the rights? I put the French flag here. Why would I do that? Yes?
Because the French don't care about religious freedom. And their official culture and political culture is secularism.
All right, so for those of you who may not have heard, he says, because the French don't care about religion, their official policy is secularism. All right, that's not exactly why I put it up here. Okay, but why else? Why would I put the French flag? Because it is a stated mindset. It's secular. You don't talk about religion. Okay. I put it up here because when I was a missionary in France, we were stopped by police, which happened. People would see Americans walking, and they would call the police. So they would just come and talk to us. One of the members of our congregation was a police officer. And so as the police were coming and talking to us, and this was at the time of the Iraq War, so my mission companion was Canadian. They totally let him go, and then they just started grilling me consistently. So as a way to kind of diffuse the situation, I'm like, oh, so do you know Sam Tirton? Like, yeah, we know him. Like, oh yeah, he's a member of our church. Like, oh, okay, and it kind of changed things. Then we went to talk to Brother Tirton later. I said, hey, you know, you may want to just mention, you know, that, you know, we talked to you and that, you know, they stopped some of the missionaries of your church. He said, I can't say anything to them. I cannot mention my faith at all at work. Granted, he's a French police officer, officer of the state, but it was such the mindset that I can't even mention religion. It's always stuck with me, okay? And in a workplace situation, when you want accommodations, you can't have that mindset. You have to be able to express your religion. You have to let people know. You can't claim religious harassment if they don't know you're religious, okay? You can't claim religious discrimination if they don't know, again, that you're religious. But you don't have to volunteer your specific faith either. You don't have to say, by the way, I'm Jewish, or I'm whatever the case may be. You don't have to do that. But you do need to assert it is for religious reasons. The first element is you have to have a sincere belief, okay? And it does need to conflict with a job requirement if you're wanting an accommodation. And as I mentioned this again, you have to notify them of the conflict due to religious reasons. If they think, hey, you want Saturday off because you want to go to some concert, you know, not because, hey, you're Jewish or Seventh-day Adventist or whatever the case may be, then they can say, nope. We're not going to work with you. Okay? You need to mention it's religious reasons. Then that triggers the obligation on their part. Question. And here comes the microphone.
Can an employer impose conditions that might seem a little onerous but fit the accommodation, such as taking the Seventh-day Adventist and working him every Saturday night after sunset? And saying, we have this need, you're the ideal one to fill it, take it or leave it.
Okay. So then that would get into...
That fits the religious, but might be onerous for otherwise, because Seventh-day Adventists like their Saturday nights of freedom, because now they can go out and do things.
Okay, it's a great question. So that is, they've accommodated conceivably, they're not working on the Sabbath.
They've made an accommodation that might be a little otherwise onerous.
But then what does that get to? What else are you protected from?
Harassment.
Harassment or discrimination and retaliation. Exactly. I had a Jehovah's Witness client, and he complained about different things at the office. It wasn't anything religious-based. It was, hey, you're not giving me my breaks, etc., etc. And so they started making him and scheduling him on his Tuesday night Bible studies. He said, look, I need to leave by 4 p.m. so I can travel. He lived literally in the sticks, so I can travel and get to my Bible study that starts at 6. And a supervisor said, you know what, the shift doesn't end at 4, and would keep this individual there until 5:30, 6, okay? And it was retaliation, because it was specific retaliation to this individual. It might not make a difference to someone else who didn't have Bible study or another religious commitment, but it did to him, and so that was religious harassment. Another question.
Same situation. If the employer says, sure, I love you to go live your religion, but that'll mean a 39-hour paycheck instead of 40 hours.
Okay.
We're only open those 40 hours. There's no other time to work.
So if there is no other time to work, then the employer, I would say, would have met his obligation, because they're not required to open and change their entire business structure for one employee. We talk about the de minimis cost. It can't be something so big. It's a big extra expense. Many times people will say, hey, look, I can't work on my Sabbath, so hire someone else to cover me instead. But that's an entirely new employee that the employer wouldn't have, but for trying to accommodate the individual. So that's why instead they say a reasonable accommodation is switch with the current employee, etc. So in that instance, other thoughts though? I would think it would be reasonable. What are some other thoughts? Yes.
It's not directly on the question you just asked, but something triggered it in my mind that at least in the part of country where we used to live, my kids would go out and find employment during high school years and part-time, and it was always, are you willing to work on Sundays? And they were perfectly fine to, you know, accept an answer, yes, I am, or no, I'm not. But if you said, no, I'm not, you were never hired. So is that permissible?
To ask when you're available to work, are you willing to work these days?
No, if you are purposefully not hired because you say, no, I'm not willing to work on Sunday because of my religious beliefs.
So I'm glad you revised your question to add that last part. If you say, no, because of my religious convictions or for religious reasons, then it gets into discrimination. Are they not hiring you because of your faith? Whereas if you simply say, nope, I'm not willing to work, you don't say anything more, then there's nothing further that can be done. Okay? Always bring up its religious reasons. That is, okay. That is the single biggest thing to know. Yes?
I guess kind of a follow-up on that. If applications, so many are online, and they don't have an option for writing in that pertinent information.
So oftentimes you'll see on applications is, do you require any accommodation? Most people will assume that to mean disability accommodation. Okay, but that it would be an area where I'd say you could put that in. And in today's day and age, admittedly, it's very difficult because it's an automated filter. Okay, that is a challenge. Okay. Whereas if, you know, you had that, you're in an interview, then you make that known. The key point is to make it known. Okay. All right. Very good question. But that is, again, the key point to make. Okay. You don't have to say, hey, by the way, Title VII requires, or I need an accommodation. So remember the Abercrombie and Fitch case. She was never hired. And why? Because they said she wouldn't fit the look policy. Okay? They knew she would need an accommodation because it was obvious. She wore to her interview a headscarf. Okay? She didn't have to say, and that was the key point of the Supreme Court decision. The employee didn't have to say, I need an accommodation. I'm going to wear a headscarf. The employer can be aware of it, and they would understand in that context specifically. It's religious, just the same as if they saw a Jewish applicant with a skull cap, okay, or a woman wearing a large cross as a necklace. The implication is there. The employer has the obligation, if they have notice of it, okay, that they might need an accommodation, to then follow up. Employers, though, most of the time will not have any clue, especially if you say, hey, I can't work during these times. They might get an idea if it's a Sunday, or if it's Saturday, they might have some indication, but unless the employee specifically asserts the right, then you can lose the right. All right. Yes, question.
It could become tricky if someone puts they don't want to work on Sunday for a religious reason, and they're not hired, they might think it was for that reason, mm-hmm. and it may not be for that reason, you know. There's no way to prove it, or if it was for that reason, there's no way to prove it, so I guess this keeps the lawyers busy. But most people aren't going to sue for that reason. They don't have the money to sue, and it might not even, because there's no way of proving either way, right, generally speaking.
So oftentimes what would happen, I'll give you an example that may help clarify that, okay? This woman was sailing through all of these levels of interviews in California. She was then interviewing with the CEO. Essentially, she had been offered the job. Everything was great. She was a high-level position, and it was just more like a meet and greet. But he looks at her resume, and he's like, "Ah, I see you spent some time in Utah. You didn't become one of those Mormons, did you?" And she said, "Well, actually, yes, I did," because she had gone to the University of Utah and converted while she was here. And he's like, "Oh, okay." The interview ended reasonably soon after that. And then next thing she knows, hey, you're not hired. Okay. She came to our office and explained the situation. And so our firm took the case. And it was very obvious, because then it was on them. Why didn't you hire her? We believe, and it seems more probable than not, that you didn't hire her because of this. Everything was great. Everyone who she'd be working with said, great, absolutely. Until this guy, he makes that comment, things change. Okay? So then the employer has the obligation, the burden to show, hey, here's legitimate non-discriminatory reasons that don't discriminate on the basis of one's faith. Okay. Okay. Also, though, when you're saying religious reasons, make sure you're connecting what the job duty is. I put a Rastafarian up here. I didn't really know until I was much older that a Rastafarian is a religion. Okay? I just thought it was people who liked Bob Marley and had dreadlocks. Okay? It's a religious practice. There was a teacher in Mississippi, and she wore her hair. She said it was more of a heritage thing. She would have different head wraps, hairstyles, that conflicted with the school's policy, as she was a teacher there. And they said, "You can't do this." And she said, "Well, no, it's my culture." And they said, "No, you can't do this." She said, "It's my culture." They fired her. Okay? And what do you think happened? Did she win in her lawsuit or not? She actually lost. Had she said, "Look, I wear these hairstyles because of my religious belief," it looked Rastafarian. People could get that. I mean, it's just like if you see a Bob Marley thing, Rastafarian. Okay? But she said, "It's my culture." What does that imply? Where she said, "It's for my religious beliefs." Then the obligation would have changed. Yes, another question.
What would her chances have been?
If she had filed a new lawsuit, then claiming it was religious.
That's the thing, she filed her lawsuit after already being fired.
Yeah.
She lost her lawsuit because the school was able to say, it wasn't because of your religion. We didn't even know about your religion.
But suppose she were to file a new lawsuit saying it's now religious.
It would be too late if she was to reapply and then they wouldn't hire her. Okay. But then again, they could say, no, it was insubordination before. So we have rights as employees. You have to effectively assert them. You know, think of it like a use it or lose it. Okay, so in that instance, maybe she was to reapply, etc. It'd be a whole lot more complicated. And they could say, no, we have legitimate reasons why we're not hiring her. Okay. It would change. But it's a good question. So let's go to some examples. I know we've talked about quite a few. But religious expression, what's a religious expression you would think that could come up in the workplace? Okay, mentioning Christ. Okay. Maybe Merry Christmas. Okay. Yes.
A picture of Christ.
Okay.
On your desk.
Good. A picture of Christ on your desk.
Or
Okay. Is that necessarily overtly religious, though?
Well, I'm using that as a...
Some people will take offense.
Great
question.
There was, in Utah, a woman who did that, and her supervisor came to her and said, you may not have that religious picture on your desk.
Okay.
And the employer, of course, was wrong.
All right. So with that, it's a great point, a religious picture at your desk or some religious, you know, statement. So if, in the case of a workplace, the employer allows employees to put personal things there, maybe that face them, no one else really, or others can see it, even if they walk by, if they allow people to have non-religious items, then they have to allow people to have personal religious items too, if they're allowing personal items. The employer could say, no personal things whatsoever, period. And then they could say, hey, you can't show that picture. An employer also could say, we don't want, you know, you can have that religious image. You can have the religious image. You could have, say a religious expression, just not to customers or only internally. They can do that because it's what is the employer projecting. Okay, that picture of someone with a temple, say it was a receptionist and it faced people as they walked in, the employer could say, no, turn it to the other side of your desk. Okay, you have a question? Okay. But what about this one? Have a blessed day.
In Mississippi, it's a normal thing to say. Everyone says it.
Okay, everyone said it. Is it overtly religious?
I guess so. It's cultural.
Okay.
Like, good morning. No man is good except the Father of our heaven. So I don't know.
Okay.
Everything can be. St. George is overtly
religious. So, okay, good point, though. Have a blessed day. So there was an employee. Okay, she worked dealing with contracts with various vendors. And apparently an employee of Microsoft was offended that she would say in her emails, have a blessed day at the end. This employee complained. Well, things got out and into the news. And Microsoft said, no, we're okay with it. Our company's fine with it. Okay, but internally, the company's like, oh, well, that account rep for Microsoft doesn't really like it. We want to keep the business with Microsoft. So here's what we'll do. Here's the accommodation. You can say have a blessed day on all your internal email communication, just not with customers. Okay? They're accommodating her. They're allowing her to say have a blessed day. Okay? But they are confining it, and it's for their business interests. So whether Microsoft was okay truly with it or not, if it's PR, I don't know, but it was interesting how it played out. But it was a reasonable accommodation. Dress and grooming. We've talked about a few. Okay. I put this image because Sikhs, only until recently, were not able to have their turbans or their beards in the U.S. military. Okay. But you can see, hey, well, it accommodated. They're staying in uniform. But what about police officers? Okay. It can go many different ways. Everything you need to know, or I guess the most important thing you need to know, is always case specific. The city of Philadelphia did not allow a Muslim officer to have a head covering. And the reason was, we need to promote uniformity, neutrality of everything. We are the police force of Philadelphia. We look the same. And so the court said, sure, that's fine. Because they had a stated, legitimate, non-discriminatory reason for doing that. We're almost out of time. And finally, Sabbath observance. Okay, we've talked a lot of different examples on Sabbath observance. But what are some other instances that maybe might come up that you've experienced or that you know others have experienced where it comes down to how do you navigate this? Okay. What about, all right, you don't have to work during your church time, but you have to come afterwards? Yes.
Right now, I'm a part-time teacher,
I work for a park ranger, and in the past, I've other parks been able to not work on Sunday, and it just has worked out. And here, since I'm newbie, and there's plenty others that want to have Sundays off, they've made accommodations that they'll put me on the later shift so I can attend a 9 o'clock service. It's not my assigned ward, but I can only attend part of service.
Okay.
And I mean, it was on me to say yay or nay, but that was kind of how it went.
Okay. And it's good. And that, you mentioned seniority, and that's something else to keep in mind too. If there is a seniority system at work, a collective bargaining agreement, that will trump. They don't have to. Remember how we mentioned you don't have to change the law, or you don't have to violate laws to accommodate. Same thing with if you have a specific agreement or a seniority system already in place, then the employer, and it's great that they've accommodated you in that way, and that would be considered a reasonable accommodation.
So yes. Seniority trumps?
Accommodation? Is that the idea?
If they have a policy.
Seniority policy trumps?
Correct.
Where they accommodate.
Say the more senior you are, you get to have your preference of schedules. Okay. And it can, or a collective bargaining agreement, something like that. Yes, you had a question too.
Oh, sorry, I must have just scratched my head.
Okay. All right. So we've gone over quite a bit. Remember, above anything else, to assert your rights, you need to make it known that if you're not going to do something, or if there's a conflict, you don't just say no, or there's a conflict. You tell them it's for religious reasons. The employer has the obligation to come back to you. You definitely can say, hey, I can't work maybe on that Sunday. Schedule me for Saturdays instead, or something that of that nature. You always can propose it, okay? You don't have the choice of the accommodation. The employer does. But it's not a reasonable accommodation unless it eliminates the conflict between your job description, your job duty or requirements, and your religious belief. Because your religious belief with the accommodation, again, that's something that religious freedom has more than any other of the protected categories, as we call them, of race, sex, okay, religion. It is religion. Religion has a special place in the law. We just have to make sure we observe our rights. I will do one final question, then we've got to end.
Do any of these laws extend to independent contractors?
Great question. The answer would be no. These are employee governing laws. And again, Title VII, as we mentioned, you have to have 15 employees. All right, so otherwise, thank you very much. We have a 15-minute break. Feel free to come on up and ask individual questions, but I really appreciate you coming today.